Yesterday, we got a major announcement in the world of local broadcasting when a true local legend announced his retirement after 38 years at Channel 8 and about 100 years total in the business. Dale Hansen, calling it quits. September 2nd will be his last day, and Dale joins us now on the Ticket Hotline. Morning, Dale.
Quitter.
Oh, my gosh. Now I've got to get up tomorrow morning to hear your major announcement, huh?
You got to get up early.
Yeah, we're going to announce that you're still retiring.
Yeah, well, a lot of people think I retired about 6 years ago. I just got around to telling them last night. That's all.
Well, we're obviously really sad to see you calling it quits because we've enjoyed watching you over the years and knowing you personally. How hard was this decision?
Yeah, it was hard. I've been kind of going through a little buyer's remorse the last couple of days, quite honestly. It's what I've always said about athletes when they retire. I think it's hard because, you know, everything that basically defines you is now over. And in my case, at least, you know, like an athlete retires at 35, they've got, you know, they got 40 plus years to go. You know, when I retire, the next big moment in my life is not something I'm really looking forward to. I did make the payment, by the way, George. I bought the incinerator plan, so I got a discount. So,
oh my gosh!
It's always like, thinking ahead.
But, yeah. But I mean, you know, it's a little bit hard because I mean, I really do believe this. But you know, the lovely Mrs. Hansen always gets mad when I joke about this. But it is funny to me that I really do believe the very next big moment in my life after September 2nd doesn't really appeal to me very much, and that's hard. But just primarily, it's hard because this is who I am. This is what I do, and in 3 months, it'll all be behind me.
So last time we talked to you, you said you hadn't worn shoes in like 3 months. Is the streak up to like 18 months now?
No, last night, seriously, I don't know if anybody noticed this, but this is absolutely true. Last night, I wore a pair of hard-soled shoes, and I promise you, this year, it was the first time I put on a pair of shoes in 15 months.
Because you went down to the studio. Yeah, you actually went to the studio.
Well, I was in the studio, and they insisted upon taking this wide shot, and I had to put on a pair of pants and everything. I mean, it was crazy. I always wore tennis shoes, I've had shoes on in 15 months, not every day, of course, but when I did the show on the patio for almost a year, I never had shoes on. I'm just sitting out there in my bare feet on the patio, and you know, when I was doing it, it was like 2 degrees that one night. That was awkward. I froze off 3 toes, but it's okay. It turned out all right. But last night I wore a pair of shoes. And I was sitting here thinking about it. It was about the first, it was actually the first time in 15 months that I've actually had on a pair of shoes. And now my ankles hurt like crazy this morning. I mean, I just didn't have the support that I'm used to.
So is this fully your decision, or did Channel 8 say, hey, they have a gun at your back and then say, leave and leave your wallet on the table?
Yeah, no, they fired me. I promise you. I think everybody keeps bringing that up because I've been so fired so many times in my life. This is the most awkward moment of it all. Is that I've only left. I've had. This is absolutely true. I've had 11 broadcasting jobs in my life, and I've been fired from 8 of them. And this is. I think people just have trouble believing that. You know that. Hey, I don't always get fired. I mean, I don't. No. This was absolutely my choice. I could have stayed. They offered, you know, wanted me to stay. We, you know, there was some concern, I think, among people in management that it would be portrayed as, because I am leaving in the middle of a contract, and that bothers me. I mean, in all seriousness, it does bother me that I put my name on a contract a while back that I would do 2 more years, and I just, for whatever reason, and there's a million of them, I just kind of hit that wall that I couldn't do that 2-year contract, and that bothers me. It really does. And I think there was some concern that some people would think, well, gee, he must have been fired. And, you know, it's much like the Jerry Jones deal. When I quit the radio broadcast years ago, he fired me the next day. And I said, you can't fire me. I quit, you know. no matter what, Barry Horn's like, well, you know, we don't think you really quit. We think he fired you. You tried to get out in front of it. I said, okay, well, that's the last time I give you any information, you know. but I think there's just that stigma attached to me that, you know, I was fired in Omaha. I was fired at the Channel 4. I was supposedly fired by the radio broadcast, et cetera. But on my sainted mother's grave, this was my decision, and I haven't had this opportunity many times in my 50 years of broadcasting. The decision was usually made for me.
Dale Hansen with us, announcing his retirement after 38 years at Channel 8. And when Fernando was setting you up for the interview today, he told us that the Thomas Boswell line that Boswell wrote in his retirement column in the Washington Post that Fernando had cited to us a couple of months back when he read it was pretty powerful to you as well when you read it.
It really was. The only thing I found strange about that, but Boswell's line that you're referencing was that he's been a great sports writer for the Post in D.C. for 52 years. And his line was, you know, I just don't have the energy to do the job properly anymore. And I think that just jumped off the page at me. I'm a digital subscriber to the Washington Post, and so I read it every day. And that line just jumped off the page at me because it really does describe the situation that I've been dealing with for quite a while. I don't think I'm close to being the energetic, enthusiastic, gung-ho reporter that, quite frankly, I think I used to be. I told this story, and I think it sums it up perfectly. And you guys remember, I used to go to Cowboys training camp for the entire 6 weeks. I mean, I was there every day. We did a 20-minute show every night, a 20-minute special, 6 nights a week from Cowboys camp. We started it in California. We continued it into Austin in the early 90s. And I loved it. I mean, I loved it. And for the last several years, probably a good 4 to 5 years, Sean Hamilton would come to me and say, you know, when do you want to go to training camp? And I said, I don't. How long do I have to go? Oh, do I? Okay. How about if I go Wednesday? Can I come back Monday? and I just didn't enjoy it. I'm sleeping in the hotel. Just doesn't appeal to me the way it used to, quite frankly. And it got harder and harder to cover my bar tabs and my expense accounts. And it just was difficult.
I mean, it was a 20-minute show on the air.
A woman who knew how to read. Yeah, they hired a woman who knew how to read those things, and that just made it difficult for me. You know, so it just got awkward. But that's when it started. I mean, it really, for about 4 to 5 years, I've been thinking off and on, okay, when, where, how. And as I said yesterday, in a lot of interviews and the like, that for the last couple of years, for the most part, I've been working for the check. And I don't like working for a check. Believe it or not, I really don't like working for a check. And I feel sorry for people who do. I've always worked for the job or for the opportunity. I mean, you guys know this. When I was at the ticket and when I did the Cowboys radio broadcast, I didn't even know what it paid when I started, nor did I care. Now after I was there for a while, it's okay, well, I got to get more money than this because I know what you're paying down at the teller. I mean, obviously they paid me a great deal more than Dan McDowell, which I think is only fair. But, no, I mean, I never did those radio jobs. And it was the same thing with the Cowboys radio broadcast. You know, one of my all-time favorite stories is when I started the Cowboys radio broadcast, they said, we want you to do 3 games, and we're going to pay you $750. And I thought, I couldn't believe it. I mean, $750 to do 3 Cowboys games? That's the most stupid thing I've ever heard. And then I did a game, they sent me a check for $750. I did another game, they sent me another check. And I said, well, I got to return this. You know, obviously there's a mistake. And the lovely Mrs. Hansen goes, the hell with them. Keep it. They'll never notice. You know, I said, well, I can't do that. I called Gary Brandt, and I promise you this is true. I called Gary Brandt, and I said, Gary, I got 2 checks here. And he goes, yeah, we pay you on Tuesday after the game. And when you do the third one, we'll send you another check. And I promise you, I went, you're paying me $750 a game? Are you stupid? I mean, are you really that stupid? And by the end, when Brad left, Aikman, Troy Aikman came up to me and said, I thought you would have quit when Brad left. And I said, you know, I'm making too much money. The check had gotten so large to do a Cowboys game. I said, I couldn't walk away. And then the next year, just looking across the field at Barry Switzer, it finally just hit me. I said, I can't do this anymore. I just can't. And it just freed me up when I finally walked away. And then, of course, I had two cars repossessed and had to get out of the house. But I got over that. I mean, it was all good after that.
So there's nothing, no truth to the rumor that you're quitting because Ellen's quitting.
Well, it did. I mean, how could I possibly go on? Because that's always been the carrot out there that
trying to get on Ellen
on the show. And you know, I'm telling you, she was a horrible person. I've never wanted to say that before, but she was.
It's all coming out now.
Yes.
Oh yeah. Now that she's quit, I guess I can tell her. She was so incredibly rude. No, I just I swear to you, was one of the absolute greatest moments. When they called, it was after the Michael Sam commentary, of course, and Sean Hamilton calls me and he goes, you're not going to believe who just called and wants to talk to you. And I swear to you, I told my wife, and Chris goes, President Obama. I said, no, not President Obama. And I said, Ellen DeGeneres. And I mean, she went nuts. She went nuts. And we made that trip to L.A. and oh my gosh, it was, it was incredible. Yeah, it was just crushing to see her go. Because now I hope she stays relevant, because I've gotten a ton of mileage out of telling people, you know, I was on the Ellen DeGeneres show.
And
I don't want people. I don't want people to ever forget that. It wasn't as good as meeting President Obama eventually, and that's still far and away the highlight of my life. When I went to D.C. in 2019 and got a nice award in D.C., I met President Obama, and then later that day I met Stormy Daniels.
So wow.
In one day, now think about this, in one day I'm sitting in President Obama's office in 2019, and 3 hours later I'm sitting on a couch next to Stormy Daniels.
And I thought, what a day.
How could you possibly have a better day than that? And I swear to you, I thought to myself, living in Texas, you know, such a deeply conservative and a religious state, you know, deep red Republican state, I was concerned about it. And I was afraid people would find out, so I did the only thing I could. I paid President Obama $130,000 not to tell anybody about it.
Okay. All right.
Oh, man.
All right, Dad, we're running out of time.
I thought that joke was a killer. I thought that was
I liked it.
We all laughed. Yeah. We're with you. We're totally with you on that.
Oh, I'm sitting there, man, I worked on that joke all night just for you guys. I get nothing. Yeah. I don't even get the fake.
It went over the fence. No, it went over the fence. We were laughing, totally laughing at it. Hey, we were talking about you earlier that, you know, watching you when we won't say how old we were, but, you know, we aspired to be a Dale Hansen someday. And there's that Hansen style, and we were talking about what a great writer you are. You take that, and then the way you've presented it over the years was so unique and so good. But where did you get that from? Was that just something you came up with, or who inspired you to write and broadcast like you did?
Well, I tell you, in all seriousness, it was an English teacher I had in high school. It was a guy named Frank Weiland, and because I always wanted to be Johnny Carson, quite frankly, and I grew up just idolizing Johnny Carson and watching the Tonight Show every night, and I've always loved the writing. I mean, I always did. And Frank Weiland was my high school English teacher, and he always encouraged it. And he was about the only guy. I would tell people, I'm going to be on the radio someday. I'm going to be on TV someday. When I'm 16, 17 years old in Logan, Iowa, you know, population like 1,100 or something. And even my own parents were like, shut up. You know, just shut up and get a job. You know, there's not a day that some kid from Logan, Iowa is going to be on TV or radio. And Frank Weiland inspired me. But the real defining moment came when I had a consultant in Omaha, Nebraska. And I was bouncing around. I'd had, you know, a couple of radio jobs and the like. And this woman said to me, and this is why I've always enjoyed consultants, if you go into a meeting with a consultant, most people in our business are like, oh, I know everything. I don't need to listen to you. I knew that I didn't know everything at that time. And I went in with, well, I'm not sure that actually works, but I'm going to listen and see if I can find something. And this woman, believe it or not, said, you know, you say a lot of funny stuff, but you talk way too fast. You've got to pause. You've got to let people catch up. You know, you deliver some great lines, and whether it's a serious line or a funny line, but she goes, you talk so fast that it's hard to follow. And I just kind of developed this so that when I came to Dallas, and here's another old reference for you, but when I came to Dallas, everybody kept saying, well, who's this poor man's Paul Harvey? And I would work on it, and it was rougher, quite honestly. I've seen some old tapes, and I thought, how did I possibly get hired with that delivery and that style? But I think it was just a little bit of all of that. But the writing, in all seriousness, was simply promote. I'm just a fan of the written word, quite honestly. And but Frank Weiland was the guy who worked with me and propped me up and liked my writing back in high school, even. And nothing gives me more pleasure than the commentaries. I mean, doing the ball scores and the highlights and the like, that really does kind of fall into the heading of a job. But there's just nothing that makes me feel better. There can't be a better drug on the street than when that red light goes on and you're reading a commentary that you know people are responding to, good and bad. And I really don't care. I just want you to think about this. I just want you to think. I don't expect everybody to agree with me. I don't know why they don't, but I don't expect everybody to agree, but I do want everybody to think about it. And there's just nothing better than when I know I've got something that's going to just pop. And Michael Sam was, as you know, George, I've been writing quite a bit of stuff before Michael Sam, but it was also somewhat before the explosion of the internet and the viral, whatever that stuff is. And,
hashtagging.
Hashtagging.
Yeah, I still haven't figured out how you do a hashtag thing, but I've heard about it. But when Michael Sam's commentary just popped, I mean, that just changed my whole world. I mean, that changed my whole life. And I think there's a few old commentaries in the archives that some people have managed to find, and some people are like, oh, wow, you wrote this in 88, you wrote this in 87, you wrote this in 91, and, you know, they weren't really, they didn't really remember it at all. But then once Michael Sam hit it, it went viral, then my whole world just flipped upside down. It was fabulous.
Well, that was just another example of your great work over the years. We've certainly enjoyed it, enjoyed the friendship, and we'll have you, maybe we'll have a big Dale party before September 2nd, a big goodbye party to Dale.
But I'm telling you the truth, George. You cannot share my hotel room when we go to Cowboys training camp.
Yeah, we'll replay the old Norm prank call, too, at some point. Yeah, we'll do that,
there's
too.
There's a reason you don't have Scott Murray on your radio station.
That's right.
Trail off, too. That's awesome. Wow, we're going to miss that, too. The old Dale trail off.
Well, Dale, sorry to see that you're a victim of a Delcus power grab.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Dale, all the best to you. We'll talk soon, hopefully.
Yeah, well, Bob, try not to do it at 7:30 in the morning ever again.
Okay, sorry about that one.
But I really.
Boy, that was a great trail off there.
Beautiful trail off.
There he goes, Dale Hansen, retiring after 38 years at Channel 8. All right.